The Italian government didn't just lose its cherished referendum, it lost it resoundingly, an outcome that will shake Europe and the financial system well into next year. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. A referendum in Italy has gone down to defeat by a wider-than-expected margin. 59% of Italians voted no on constitutional reform. The Prime Minister Matteo Renzi is resigning, with new elections to come there, probably in early spring, if not earlier. This is a political story, Italian voters rejecting their elites, with some parallels to Brexit in the UK. But it's also a financial story, with the outcome that could affect efforts to prop up Italy's third-largest bank, Monte dei Paschi di Siena. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London is just back from Rome. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, David.
All right, so we'll hear eventually when there might be a new election and find out who is really running Italy. But why is this connected so acutely to the Italian banking system?
The Italian banks are among the most fragile in Europe. 18% of their loans are non-performing. Some seven of them are in big trouble. The world's oldest bank, Monte dei Paschi, is in the middle of a 5 billion euro refinancing operation. This referendum result will frighten off many investors. It is possible some of the banks will actually have to go to the government and beg for a bailout, which the interim caretaker government will certainly be tempted to provide, because they won't want to make the bank's small investors, the small bondholders, suffer. And that could bring it into conflict with the European Union, which has effectively banned bailouts. So it looks as if we're going to see some turbulence and some friction between Italy and the rest of the European Union.
Now, this outcome, the polls were right in this case, was expected. But why does this have wider implications beyond the banking system to the rest of Europe?
This is a shockwave. I mean, you know, Italy is one of the founding members of the EU. Until a few years ago, it was one of the most enthusiastic member states. Now, with this vote, it's delivered a stunning rebuke, a slap in the face to the rest of the EU and the way it's run. That's bound to encourage more Euroscepticism elsewhere in Europe. More anti-establishment parties are going to get a wind in their sails from this. So 2017 looks as if it's going to be a pretty turbulent year in Europe.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London, just back from Rome. Stephen, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Now, all that said, the early market reaction today has been fairly calm. The FTSE in London is up 0.3%. The DAX index in Germany is up 1.5%. The key stock index in Milan is down 0.5%. Adolfo Laurenti is global economist for J. Safra Saracen, based in Zurich, Switzerland.
The bad news about the outcome of the referendum was broadly anticipated. We have learned not to trust the polls too much in recent months. But the indication was very clear, the no would prevail. So I think the markets have already prepared for this outcome, and now they are setting into a wait-and-see mode, waiting to see what will be the next move by Matteo Renzi and by the President of the Italian Republic, which at this point become the arbiter of the political crisis.
Now, one piece of countervailing news from Europe today, the pro-European Green Party candidate for president won, trouncing a nationalist rival for that post. This was for president of Austria, which has a parliamentary system where more power resides with the prime minister, not the president. Here's a big idea we'll keep following as automation and software take over many jobs formerly held by humans. It's called a universal basic income, a policy in which all citizens get money from the government. There's some interesting experiments going on here and around the world. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell starts us off on a series we'll have this week. Good morning, Chris.
Hello, David.
So here in the U.S., with the recent triumph of Donald Trump and a brand of the conservative movement, this notion of a universal basic income is getting more attention.
Universal basic income is one of those ideas that attracts strange bedfellows. I mean, Huey Long, remember in the 1930s, Louisiana, he had to share the wealth program. And then in the 1960s, conservative economist Milton Friedman, he suggested the idea of a universal basic income. And in more recent history, Charles Murray. He's conservative at the American Enterprise Institute, and he is promoting a $13,000 universal basic income. here's the twist and here's the attraction for conservatives. You're going to get your universal basic income, and we're going to get rid of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, and so on, get rid of the whole social safety net in return for universal basic income.
The American Enterprise Institute has a proposal, and what would it be? How much money?
$10,000 plus $3,000, additional $3,000 for health insurance. Now, as you can imagine, this particular idea isn't going over very well among the more liberal proponents of the idea. What they see this as, it's a supplement to income. It's a supplement to a lot of social safety net programs like Social Security.
And now you think the ascent of Donald Trump could give this idea some added juice?
Donald Trump's promised to bring back a lot of high-quality mining, manufacturing jobs. But what if they don't emerge? An alternative is people to say, hey, let's use the universal basic income to raise the wages, the living standards of these workers. So Silicon Valley and manufacturing could come together and really give this idea some life.
Chris Farrell, Marketplace's senior economics contributor. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
My colleague Sarah Gardner looks at how California's Silicon Valley is paying to test the idea of universal basic income tomorrow on Marketplace here. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.